set sail today, set sail today. The captain had the crew in shackles. The edge of the world today, down, down, down. The ship, it set sail today, set sail today.
Hard to believe that an 11-year-old boy could change the course of history, but that is just what happened when Hunter Scott, now 16 and our guest this week, started researching the sinking of the USS Indianapolis on July 30, 1945. Scott tells us his story in conversation with Talking History's Fred Nielsen.
What if your middle school history project actually changed history? That's exactly what happened to Hunter Scott. Hunter, now 16, was in the sixth grade when he began researching the tragedy of the USS Indianapolis. 3 years later, he stood in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee and gave testimony that helped clear the name of Charles McVeigh, the ship's captain. Hunter Scott, welcome.
Well, thanks. Glad to be here.
Before we get to your story, perhaps we could begin with the ship itself. What happened to the USS Indianapolis on July 30th, 1945?
Well, the USS Indianapolis was the flagship of the Fifth Fleet, and it had just delivered the first atomic bomb, which was later going to be dropped on Hiroshima. So it was on its way from Guam to Leyte on July 30th, and it was sunk by the Japanese submarine, the I-58, on its way to Leyte for gunnery practice with the USS Idaho. And it turns out that when the ship, the men waited in the water for 4 days and five nights, the Navy completely forgot about them, took them off the plotting board, never reported them overdue. And when they got back, actually court-martialed Captain McVeigh.
So the captain of the ship is court-martialed after the ship sinks. What exactly were the charges against him?
He was charged with failure to follow a zigzag pattern and failure to sound abandoned ship. He was found guilty of failure to follow a zigzag pattern and good visibility. But if you talk to the survivors of the Indianapolis, I've got quotes from them saying that the visibility was poor. That you could not even see your hand in front of you at some points. But when the ship was sunk, the clouds had uncovered the moon for about 15 minutes when the Indianapolis was sunk. And that's when the I-58 sank the Indianapolis.
You were 11 years old when you ran across this story. The sinking, indeed World War II itself, was a long time in the past. How did you run across the story?
Well, between my fifth and sixth grade year, I was going into middle school, and I had the opportunity to participate in History Fair, which is a national competition where kids compete in history to see who has done the most research and who knows their topic the best and can display it the best. And so I was looking for a topic, and I was watching the movie Jaws one day with my dad, and we came across the story of the Indianapolis. There's a little segment, I don't know if you remember in there, but there's a segment when Captain Quint and other guys are sitting around the boat discussing scars and shark bites, and that leads into the story of the Indianapolis. So from then, I was like, Dad, is this a true story? And he said, I don't know, Hunter, but you're in front of the TV. And he kind of brushed me to the side a little bit. I said, no, you know, this sounds like it could be a good topic for my History Fair project. He's like, well, why don't you go to the library and check out a book? Now, he was a middle school principal, actually my middle school principal at the time when I was going to go into sixth grade. So he gave the typical teacher's response, the typical administrator's response, which was to go to the library. So I checked out the book, Fatal Voyage, and that was written by Dan Kurtzman, and I read that book and then put an ad in the Gosport, which is the local Navy newspaper, and in that article I asked if anybody had any information on the Indianapolis or where to locate a survivor, and so from then I found survivor Mr. Maurice Glenn Bell, who lives in Mobile, Alabama. I set up an interview with Mr. Bell, and he gave me a list of all of the other survivors, so from that list I was able to contact 156 of the remaining survivors, which was all of them at the time.
Is Captain McVeigh himself still alive?
He is not. He committed suicide in 1968 because of what the Navy had done to him. I mean, they just completely made him the scapegoat to cover up for their naval blunders, or to cover up for their mistakes.
The 156 survivors that you talked to, were they eager to talk to you, or, you know, we sometimes hear of World War II veterans who are reluctant to tell their stories. What reaction did you get?
I I came across a mixture of both, but mostly the men of the Indianapolis were willing to talk to me, and a lot of them opened up for the first time to talk to me and to tell me their side of the story. So I got 156 different sides of the story, but all of them agreed in one area, and that was that Captain McVeigh should not have been court-martialed, that the Navy court-martialed Captain McVeigh, hung him out to dry to cover up for their mistakes during World War II. But for a lot of men, that was the first time that they had actually opened up and told their story.
What was the reaction talking to someone of your age? I'm curious.
I mean, it's just a lot of them, most of them, they were more than happy to talk to me and more than happy to get the story out, because these men want as many people to know about the Indianapolis as possible, because it was covered up so much. In 1945, when the war came to an end, there was big headlines, Japan surrenders, end of war, at the top of every page, every newspaper across the country, and some even over the world, and yet underneath was a small article about the Indianapolis and the loss of so many lives. So the Navy tried real hard, and as a matter of fact, when I went to the library to do research on the Indianapolis, I found very little information written in some of the major World War history books. And that was because the Navy tried to cover it up. So many of the men were more than happy to tell their story.
What specifically did they recall about Captain McVeigh and particularly the time of the sinking?
Every one of them, it was almost unanimous that everyone said they were in love with Captain McVeigh, that even if they had to go sail again today, that they would pick Captain McVeigh as their captain. So there was, all the survivors were behind Captain McVeigh 100% and felt that he should not have been court-martialed.
So you took the information that they gave you, and perhaps you could describe for us how you turned it into the History Fair project.
Well, what I did was, once Mr. Bell gave me the list of the 156 survivors, I contacted all of those men and gathered research from really all over the world, some of the survivors, and they would just send in old newspaper articles and pictures and first-hand primary documents and their accounts that they had written right after the sinking, when some of them when they were even in the hospitals. And so once I got all this, actually people even saw me on news shows such as NBC Nightly News and TNN Primetime Country. And as a matter of fact, Captain McVeigh's son, Kimo McVeigh, saw me on TNN Primetime Country and actually called the studio, and that's how I first got in touch with him. So I have a ton of information coming from all over the country. And so from that point, I picked out some of the most interesting things and put them on a display board so that I could display it to the judges at the History Fair.
Now, I've been a judge myself at History Fairs or History Day competitions for middle school and high school students. This sounds like a sure winner. I assume you did well.
Actually, I did, up until the state. I got first at the school competition, and I was the first sixth grader to ever win the county competition. And at the state, I was disqualified for displaying two notebooks by my project, which I asked the History Fair coordinator for our county, should I display the notebooks or not, because they were, I mean, 2-3-4-inch thick notebooks full of firsthand accounts and newspaper articles from the time and just primary sources. And she said, definitely. And so I was also given an old copy of the rule book, which didn't mention anything about it. So I was like, all right, well, I'll put these projects by my notebook. Put these notebooks by my project. I think that it'll help me out. And when they were done judging, they took a big section of the rule board and the rule book and blew it up real big and highlighted the part where it says no notebooks shall be displayed by your project or something to that effect. I don't remember exactly what it said. So I was disqualified from the state competition.
Now, in most cases, I dare say that would be the end of the story, but in a sense, that's really just the beginning of yours. What did you do with the information that you'd gathered after the History Fair was over?
Well, from that point, I was hoping to restore honor to the Indianapolis survivors by clearing Captain McVeigh's name and trying to get them a Presidential Unit Citation. I was trying to do that by winning the National History Fair and draw media attention to my project, but it turns out I'm a strong Christian, that the Lord had other plans for me. And so I talked with a good friend of mine who is our congressman, Congressman Scarborough, and I displayed my project in his office here in Pensacola. And people were just coming in and just lining up outside of his door so they could come in and take a look at the information that I had accumulated and compiled about the Indianapolis. So he's like, Hunter, man, you gotta come in my office and tell me what's going on with this. So I went in his office, and he agreed with me that we need to do something to help restore honor to Captain McVeigh. So we drafted legislation, and the first legislation we drafted was a bill, H.R. 3710. And I personally got to drop that in the hopper on the House, which was a great experience. And what the bill would have done if passed is it would have erased the court-martial from Captain McVeigh's record and granted a presidential unit citation to the final crew of the Indianapolis. But it turns out that that legislation ended with the congressional session. So instead, we introduced a joint resolution in the House and the Senate, and it ended up being attached to the Armed Services Appropriation measure and passed. I mean, the Navy wasn't going to fight it if it was attached to their budget. So there really was not a whole lot the Navy could do about it from then on. So the legislation passed, and Captain McVeigh, it's on Captain McVeigh's record right now that Captain McVeigh should not have been court-martialed and that he was not responsible for the loss of the Indianapolis and her crew.
Sounds like you're not only a skilled historian, but a skilled politician as well.
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate it.
You've mentioned already the efforts of your congressman. You also wrote to President Clinton and to the Secretary of the Navy before the legislation passed. I'm curious, what did you say to the President and to the Naval Secretary, and how did they respond?
Well, I wrote them originally asking for a presidential pardon for Captain McVeigh or for them to reopen the court-martial, but I soon discovered that Captain McVeigh did not do anything wrong to receive a pardon, and both Secretary of the Navy John Dalton and President Clinton responded with very stern, but I mean, they were nice, no letters saying that that they've looked into the matter and Captain McVeigh's court-martial would not be reopened. So, I mean, I didn't let that stop me. I just said, well, I guess now that I look back on it, a letter from the president isn't going to stop me.
Most people don't get letters from the president, for that matter. You also testified before the Senate Armed Services Committee. What was that experience like? What did you tell them?
That was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me to testify in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee. It was chaired by Senator Warner at the time, and Senator Smith, who has been a tremendous help on the Senate side with the legislation, got the survivors and I in for a hearing with the Armed Services Committee. So there was me and three other survivors on one side of the room, and then on the other side of the room we sat the Judge Advocate General of the Navy, the Vice Chief of Naval Operations, and the Chief Naval Historian. And then their entourage of people behind them just taking notes the entire time. I think that the Navy left there with the tail between their legs. I mean, no offense to the Navy, but the survivors and I just completely gave the Navy what they didn't expect. The Navy had refused to look at my research, and I'd given them the opportunity to look at it ample times, but they said no. So when we presented it to them, they didn't know how to respond to the questions that the survivors and I asked to them.
Well, as I recall, it's not just a figurative thing. You literally gave, was it the Secretary of the Navy, your material?
Yes, sir, I did. I handed it to him personally. So I don't know if they looked at it or not.
And as I recall, too, he's a PhD from somewhere, isn't he?
Yes, I believe so. I'm not exactly sure on that.
And you were 14 years old at the time, informing
yes,
him. So in the end, after the president and the naval secretaries and the senator involved, the result is that Captain McVeigh's name, after what, some 50 years or more, is finally cleared.
Yes, sir. Which that was my goal all along, is to restore honor to these group of survivors, these group of World War II veterans who served aboard the Indianapolis, just to restore honor to that group, and which Tom Brokaw calls the greatest generation. And so that's what I was trying to do, was restore honor to those men and restore honor to Captain McVeigh and the McVeigh family by exonerating him and clearing his name. And it was finally accomplished.
Now, you have another life, too. You're, what, a junior in high school, I believe?
Yes.
What are your future plans? Going to college?
Well, today was the last day of school, finally.
Congratulations.
So I'm excited about that. And over the summer, I just plan to do a little fishing. A couple weeks ago, as a matter of fact, me and a friend of mine caught a 200-pound bull shark off the beach, and so that was a great experience. And as far as college goes, I guess that's my summer job over the summer, is trying to get into colleges and filling out applications for scholarships and college applications, and that's pretty much going to take up my whole summer.
Well, best of luck to you, Hunter.
Well, thanks.
Appreciate your being with us.
Well, thanks. I enjoyed it as well. I appreciate you having me on the show.
I've been visiting with Hunter Scott, whose story has been told by Pete Nelson in the book Left for Dead, A Young Man's Search for Justice for the USS Indianapolis, published by Delacorte Press.